And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. A little more than a week. We'll be moving into March already, right on the heels of springtime. Just goes by so fast, it just doesn't stop, does it? First-time caller, Popeye, they call him, in Waco, Texas. Hi, Popeye.
Hello, you guys.
Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be on it.
You're welcome. You do sound like Popeye.
Yeah, I'm about 18 spinach.
Can we get you on the phone though? Or you're sounding like you're 20 miles away in a tin can.
Well, I am on the phone. I got a cell phone I'm talking on.
That's a little better.
And I was thinking, you know, funny you mentioned that. I was sitting there listening to you on the radio, and it's like delayed. You know, like they used to have, like when they went to the moon. And when they were relaying the telemetry messages back radio, they were kind of a little, you know, seconds delayed.
Yep, there's a little one there.
Yeah, when you went to commercial, I was listening on the telephone, and I was still hearing the show. it was kind of tripping me. Well, I deduced some reasons out. I wanted to say one thing to you. How you doing there, fellow shipmate?
Yes.
I'm in the Navy myself.
9 years for me, Popeye.
Oh, well, I did 3 years, and I had a couple of reserve, 1 year inactive.
Well, that's good, though. Thank you for serving.
Well, thank you, sir. I was on the destroyer. What was you on?
I was a public information officer. I was at the Pentagon.
Oh, lucky you. I've never been up there. I wanted to go.
No sea legs for me.
Oh, I got my sea legs. I'm a blue nose and a shellback. Hello. In the Navy, they know what that is.
How's the weather down in Texas? Anything any better?
Oh, yes, sun come out just to shine. Praise the Lord. I didn't have any problem with my electricity or the water.
Well, that's good.
I live in an apartment complex over here in Lacey, Wakeview, a little town right outside of Waco. I call it Waco. Probably everybody else does, too.
Yeah, they sure do. So what's going on, Popeye?
Oh, nothing. You won't believe how I've tried calling before and never could. You know, I feel like calling Miss Norway up. I like to listen to your program and on format. I like listening about different things and, you know, whatever. I ain't got nothing better to do. I set up. I'm kind of old now. I'm 60, so I don't have a job.
Oh, 60's not old. You're young.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell them gals. They asked me how old I am. I said, I'm young 60. You know, they got a name for that. You know, like they call somebody in their 80s an octogenarian. And I figured, they call them a 68-genarian. I said, well, I'm a 68-genarian.
Well, I'll tell you what, Popeye, 60's the new 40, and check in with us. I like you. You sound pretty cool and a decent human being. And plus, you're a Navy guy. So thanks for that. And we'll take a few more calls. The board is packed. Let's go to Matthew in Rochester, New York. Hey, Matthew, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, George. Hey, I'm on Bluetooth because I'm delivering newspapers, so if my call is really bad,
you sound pretty good.
Tommy said the same thing. So, anyway, I think that you are more psychic than you think you are, so I want to ask you two questions.
Okay.
One is infinitely easier than the other because it's a 50-50 shot. But here's the first thing. This is sort of a remote viewing question. I want you to clear your mind, and I'm going to give you a word, and I'll explain to you afterwards the reason. But I want you to tell me where you think this might be.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Slide ruler.
Slide ruler.
Yes, sir.
Interesting that you would say that, because I still have a slide ruler from my early days in high school. And so when you ask me where it is, what do you mean by that, though?
There's one in my family, and I'd like to know if you can tell me the location.
It is, you're giving me a little assignment here. It's in somebody's basement. I don't know whose basement it is. But it's like in a drawer or like a bucket or something like that.
Okay. All right. Here's the reason why. My my father passed away in November, and he was a mathematician for Eastman Kodak. And he had a slide ruler that he purchased when he was in the Navy in Japan.
Wow.
And it's made of ivory. So we've been trying to locate it for easily 3 or 4 years.
Did he have a basement?
Well, he's moved a couple of times, but it's interesting you say that because my sister that has all his belongings now. Most, if not everything he owns is in a basement. Possibly in a box.
Maybe. So, it might be there.
So I'm going to have the opportunity probably tomorrow to go and see her. So I will certainly take your advice and see what I can find.
And I'll even hone in a little bit more for you, Matthew. Look for a gray bucket because it could be near there in a box.
Near a gray bucket in a box.
And if I'm right, check back with us a little bit later on next week.
I hope to do that. The second question is, this is a little bit easier. I have been trying to figure out, I am going to be a grandfather in a couple of days, and I have no idea what the sex of the baby is. Now, this is my son and my daughter-in-law. So here's your 50-50 shot. Is it a boy or a girl?
Oh, boy. Now, let me ask you a question. Does the daughter-in-law seem to be carrying the baby high or low?
She seems to be carrying it low.
Then it's going to be a boy.
Going to be a boy. Okay.
I got a 50-50 chance there, but I've always been told if the woman is carrying in her pregnancy the baby lower, chances are it's a boy.
Okay, so I have one last thing to ask you, and then I'll let you go because you got other callers.
Okay.
Okay, so if you believe that it is a boy, can you give me the letter of the alphabet of the name they're going to name this child?
B, as in boy.
Okay.
Let's see what happens.
Thank you so much. Hey.
Okay, good luck, Matthew. Congratulations on being a grandfather.
Hey, George, I did forget to tell you, you are quite professional. You are nice. You treat every caller as if they are the main guest. That is a gift that certainly is well appreciated. So thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you. And enjoy the little grandbaby because they are special. I'm a great grandfather now, if you can believe it. My mother, who's going to be 92 in a couple months, is a great, great grandmother. And we'll get her on the end of May again because she always wants to come on and say something. And I can't turn her down. Tom, we got a text and tweet. What do you got for us?
Great grandfather.
You're the one who deals with my mother a lot when you get her on.
She's such a nice lady.
Remember last time she wanted to know why I cut her short?
Yeah, I do. I remember that. We need to do a Stump George segment. That's fun.
That could be.
Carrie, who is trucking in South Dakota, says, where's the one place in the world you haven't been that you would like to go?
Well, let me tell you something. I have not taken a vacation in 18 years doing this show. I don't need to. I'll take a Friday off every once in a while for myself, or I'm traveling too, because we're doing Beyond Belief tapings on Friday now, and we got events once COVID was not here. But I've been to Mexico. Almost got kidnapped there. Google that. Just say George Norrie
only
kidnapped
you.
In Mexico.
Only you.
That was a disaster beyond things.
There's got to be that one place.
You know, I wouldn't mind going to London or something like that in Paris just to check that out one day.
Cool. That sounds like fun.
How about you? You've been all over the map.
I think the one place I would really like to go that I haven't been is Sweden.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you like to go there?
I don't know. It's just something that's gnawing at me. I can't explain it.
Interesting. Reykjavik. That's in Iceland.
I didn't know that.
Did you? That's where Bobby Fischer played his chess tournament against Boris Spassky.
Reykjavik?
Reykjavik.
Reykjavik.
I can't spell it. It's a long word.
I'll look it up.
To the phones, Clayton, truck driving in Illinois. Hello, Clayton. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, George. How are you doing today?
Everything's good. Thank you. How about you?
Doing pretty good. Just hauling a John Deere load down in southern Illinois. Going to be crossing the Missouri state line here in about 15 minutes.
You're not too far from where my cave is, where I am.
Yeah, So listen, I got a couple things on my mind. I've been listening to your show for a while, ever since I, you know, been a truck driver. And the two things that are on my mind is, the first topic I want to talk about is the Mars landing that was recently advertised here just about yesterday. That was on the news. My question is, you know, since that Mars landing, I've got Netflix. Netflix is promoting the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Total Recall, you know, when he goes to Mars and he's got to fight those enemies that, you know, his identity gets changed from being a scientist, you know, and he has to go into that dream stage, and he's got to fight, you know, he's got to fight the guys and try, you know, he's got that corrupt wife. And then they also were playing that movie called Mars Attacked.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, the thing that was on my mind is, and I was talking to a friend earlier tonight about it, we were having this conversation, you know, from Earth to Mars, it's 129...
million miles.
You know, ship this...
I'm losing...
Yeah, if they're going to ship this, you know, the robotic car that they sent up there with the slow flying helicopter that I saw, they said that it was going to be up there for about 3 months, and, you know, they want to get evidence of living life.
Yep.
Searching and stuff. The thing that was on my mind is like, well, you know, how are they going to operate this machine? Are they going to do it via satellite, or the satellite's close to Mars? Because, you know, do you think they'd have to have some type of an internet connection to maneuver this, you know, rover that's going to be on Mars? And one thing that me and my friend were talking about is, you know, what if we end up bringing back some type of a sample that, you know, like end up some type of a virus back to America or something like that, back to Earth from Mars, you know, because, you know, that'd be a catastrophe. We end up bringing back some type of a virus from Mars, you know.
You can't rule that out. Remember the movie The Andromeda Strain about a virus that popped up on the planet? Who knows? You know, I'm convinced there was some kind of life on Mars a long time ago. To answer your first question, they are probably using a satellite to send up telemetry to get things working with the Perseverance rover. And, you know, they're probably communicating with it that way. Prior to satellites, they were going direct. But I'm pretty sure they're hitting a satellite up there and then sending a signal over. They got that down to a science. But in terms of some kind of virus or some kind of Martian disease that they could bring here, they got to be careful. I mean, because you cannot rule that out. You just cannot. Let's go next to the other calls before the break. Joe in Boston, welcome to the program. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, George, how you doing? I have three things I want to bring up.
All right.
One, I agree. First, I'll do the loneliness. I'm very lonely, and as you know, I hope you'd be willing to help me like you did those two military men, because I'm getting to the point where I just don't want to go on anymore. I'm 73 years old. I'll be 74. You talked about a lady who walks in her sleep and who moves furniture around. If I were there, I'd be hugging her. That's interesting. And someone else who eats fried chicken or something like that. Those are interesting things to me. I guess people do that because they're lonely or they want something or something. I don't know.
Now, when you say you're lonely, what do you mean, for companionship or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, I'm very lonely in the apartment up here, partially because of this COVID. And I'm disappointed in Christian. He still thinks that these masks work, and they don't. You've had Dr. Gold.
Yeah, but don't forget, we allow people to express their views, Joe.
Oh, sure.
You know, I'm not going to knock people because of what they think or what they believe.
I wish Dr. Gold would explain it more. Maybe you'll have her on. Remember you had her on?
Yeah. She's been under fire, though, let me tell you.
Yeah, she lost her job because she speaks out.
Yep.
And that's crazy. But, yeah, it's hard, very hard. You know, my family wants nothing to do with me. And also, you mentioned something the other night, which I think you misinterpreted when you were talking. Let me put it this way. I had a friend who in high school went out with, he was 15, 14, and I don't know whether this was right or wrong, but I have mixed feelings. You thought this guy should be in jail because he was, 18 or 20, and he went out with a younger girl. Now, Neil, who you don't know, is a musician who's not playing now because of COVID. The teachers all were hugging him, and he had fun with them. And it didn't you know, make him the worse for wear. So I think it's an individual thing like they do in other countries. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that you should do all kinds of bad things, but, you know, people age at different...
Yeah, but the law says, Joe, you got to be 18 years or older to get involved. It's 18. Yeah, it's got to be 18 years older or older.
So and people like my friend Neil and that were wrong and having fun with...
Yes. In the eyes of the law, it was wrong, and I abide by the law.
Yeah, but, you know, down south where Barry and them, they say it's 16 because we've had callers
it's 18.
On our local station that got married at 15 and 16.
So that's with parental permission.
Okay, so it has to be with... Do they do that up here with parental permission?
I don't know. I mean, if I were a parent, I wouldn't allow a 16-year-old to get married, would you?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because we had a woman who called up and who was down there, and she said that's how they live.
Now, you know, in terms of getting lonely, you got the radio show. We're your family, Joe.
Oh, come on, George. I mean, you're nice guys, but you know what I mean. I have medical problems. I can't get help. It's just very hard.
I know it is, but my point is, though, we're still here for you. I mean, if you get lonely, you pick up the phone, we talk to you.
Yeah, I know.
It's not like it's not like you're, you know, cut off from everything.
But I wish I had some friends from coast to coast I could get together, maybe call. I still hope you come up here, George.
Well, we're going to plan on a show. When COVID goes away, I've told Tom, because I have relatives in Boston.
Yeah, do you think it'll go away, really?
Yes, absolutely. I think herd immunity will knock this thing out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Dr. Gold. These masks and all these drugs aren't doing any good. And who was that person that got killed? Then I'll let you go the other night after.
That was a Detroit News former anchor person. She was 68 years old, and she had gotten the shot. They never said the shot killed her, but she died after she got the shot.
We've had several people that have that happen up here, too.
I know it, but they're not saying much about that. But, Joe, we're family for you. Don't forget. Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Eddie, I got about a minute for you. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks, George. Yeah, you know, Rush, you're right, and you did a great tribute introducing him. But you and Art Bell actually, I think, are better interviewers. And I brought up Edward R. Murrow, of course, is a great newscaster like you.
No, I used to study him.
Yeah, and, well, I found an interesting quote by him just recently. He said, a nation of sheep begets a government of wolves,
He was right on.
Yeah. Now, I got a bad deja vu, and I want to thank you about not taking the shot and letting people know you don't take the shot, which I don't either. And Dr. Gold is very knowledgeable. But here's the thing. I know someone that just came out of the secret lab in South Africa where that virus is so mutated that they've tested, he said, at that time, 80%, it's not working at all.
It's changed too much. It's changing too quickly.
And so that means even if you've caught this and have built an immunity, that means people don't get this. That means it's like starting all over. It'd be like a whole new chapter
exactly.
All over. And the World Bank has even said, let's stretch this thing out to 2025. But what I'm trying to point out is when you give a vaccine through the skin, a molecule that creates an antibody, that's, quote, a vaccine. But smallpox and polio, they always use the entire RNA and DNA, and it fights what comes in, and it'll keep you from getting smallpox.
Herd immunity. That's the way to do it, Ed. That's, I think, the only way to fight this thing. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about the prophet, Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. I had a chance to talk with past life therapist Joanne DiMaggio, no relation to the late ballplayer Joe, about past lives and the sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce. Tell us a little bit about Edgar Cayce before we get into your work. I did it to myself again.
Sure. Well, Mr. Cayce is still considered the most renowned psychic of the 20th century. In his lifetime, he gave over 14,000 readings. He would go into a trance and access people's records and give them information. 12,000 of those were health readings, which earned him the title of the father of holistic medicine. And then 2,000 of them, as later on in his life, he started to do life readings, and that included information about individuals' past lives. And so he passed in 1945, but to those of us who are avid followers of his teachings, it's as if he's still with us because his information is timeless. I think he was really far ahead of his time, especially with the health readings. So he's been an important part of my life for many, many years.
Oh, his health readings were uncanny. I mean, I still take a lot of the things that he recommended for all kinds of things, and they still stand pat, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big fan of the glycothymoline, which was created as a mouthwash, but I've been using it every day as a gargle, somewhat as a safeguard against this virus, because it creates an alkaline system for you. And so I've been doing that. Some people, Mr. Casey would say, you should sip a little bit of it in water every day. That's one of the ones I've been following. The watermelon seed tea is good for the kidneys. I've been doing that. And so many others. The obviously, the castor oil packs are what most people associate with him.
He's one of his recommendations was to take a couple raw almonds a day to help prevent cancer. And I do that all the time. I mean, he didn't say cure. He said prevent.
Exactly.
But I do that. And there's something in almonds that help fight this thing, huh?
Yeah, he really had his finger on the pulse of that. And that's why, you know, you can access his reading still on the EdgarCasey.org website for members. And you can just type in, like you type in cancer, and then everything will come up related to that Casey had in one of his readings.
When he was in these trance states, Joanne, who was the spirit guide, or was there a helper that helped him in that state?
I don't know if it was a helper as such, but he was able to access Akashic records. And so you had to ask him a question. He didn't just pontificate on something. So he would be responding to a question that was sent to him either in the mail or given to him in person, and then he would access the records and provide the information that way. He had a source, but I don't know in terms of it being identified as any entity in particular. But he always was able to get the answer. You could ask him anything. And that was what was so brilliant about him and why nobody has come in anywhere close to him.
No, not at all.
Past. So I would have given anything to have had a reading from him. And so I live vicariously through the people who did.
After those 14,000 readings, did they eventually beat him down physically?
Well, there's different stories about what happened to him, but that's pretty much the company line that he was exhausted. And
it just killed him, basically.
He was told not to, by spirit, told him, you know, not to do so many readings. But he felt an obligation to all the people who contacted him, and he wanted to make sure that he serviced as many people as possible. So, yeah, he overdid it.
Yeah, he could not say no to somebody.
No, no. That was his whole purpose in life, was to really help people.
Give us an overview. I did it to myself again. Tell me about this.
Overview. Well, it's based on the Life Between Lives work that was started by Dr. Michael Newton.
Okay, he's one of the best.
Right. Went in my own practice as a past life therapist over the years. I noticed that people were blaming everyone and anything for the way their life was going. So it was like, my mother's fault, it's my father's fault, it's my husband, you know, fault, whatever. And I knew that they had actually designed this life so that it could be helping their soul to grow, to deal with some issues from the past. So I wanted to redirect their thinking from blaming others to embracing life as a means of soul's growth. And then I also wanted to look at the material that was already out there, to look at, really study Dr. Newton's work, and to challenge or confirm or build on that prior research, and then compare it with the Casey teachings to see if they were in alignment. And then the third reason was to explore the common afterlife experiences of souls, because I thought if you get a group of people together who don't know each other And they're all saying similar things to what is it like to die? What does the afterlife look like? What is the experience between lifetimes? It would ease the fear of death on the part of those that are still on the physical plane. So those were the reasons that I pursued the study.
And tell me about the study itself. How did you set it up?
Well, luckily, I have a lot of people that are willing to volunteer for my research studies.
That helps.
Yes. I call them from the, obviously from the ARE folks who love to do this sort of thing, and also from the like-minded souls that I know at Unity of Charlottesville Church. So I put it out there that I was doing this research study, and I limited it to 25 people because in the past I've done, I think the last time I was with you, I was talking about Karma Can Be a Real Pain, which was a research study about how chronic illness can be traced to a past life.
Right.
And
right.
I had 50 people in that study, and the publisher said, I can't possibly publish all of this. So I decided, well, I'm not going to go through having the process of eliminating people, so I'll just stick with 25 and then augment that with actual client transcripts from prior to the research project. So I had 23 women and 2 men in it, which is unusual. I usually get more men, but for some reason they shied away from this project, but the women were all happy to do it. The average age was 62. They came from all professions. I had a social worker, educators, I had a lawyer, I had a flight attendant, and marketing people, so all sorts of people. So we started with a past life regression to go to the life that was most impacting them now, and then from there we went into the between life state.
And were you satisfied with the results?
I was very satisfied with the results. I was absolutely humbled by it and blown away by it because they were seeing basically the same thing. They had a lot of aha moments when they were able to tie that past life that was impacting them now with what was actually going on in their life now. They could see how they actually planned this out themselves. Everything from selecting their parents to members of their soul family to their soul's mission to why they chose the body they're in now. All of this information came through that they didn't have before, and it was a missing piece of the puzzle as to why their life was the way that it is now.
And with most of the people, the participants in this study, were they believers in the afterlife prior to these episodes?
They were. If they had a specific religious belief, they didn't share that with me. Actually, that never even came up. I had nobody use the word heaven or hell. They had no concept of, they didn't talk about God or St. Peter meeting them at the pearly gates or anything that you would think would come up. None of that did. So they had regressions before. So they had a sense of the continuity of life and that the soul continues to exist after death. So they had that understanding, but they had not really explored what goes on in that planning session, in that between life state.
Well, it's an amazing research project. And how about yourself? Were you always a believer in life after death?
I was, but I was born and raised Catholic, so my view of it was a little different than what I believe today. And I went to 12 years of Catholic school, too.
So oh, boy.
I really was indoctrinated in it. But it didn't make any sense to me, to be honest with you. I thought, how can a just God, you know, only give you one chance? And if you really screw up, and you go straight to hell. I remember in elementary school, I was terrified because at that time on Fridays we couldn't eat meat. And when if you did, that was considered a mortal sin. And if you died without confessing that, you'd go straight to hell. And that just stayed with me. And I thought, this doesn't make any sense. I don't understand how a loving God could be like this. So when I was a teenager, I started reading books. I read The Search for Bridie Murphy. That was the first book that I read. That came out in the 50s. I think I read it when I was sometime in the 60s. That's how early it
was. Yeah, that was a classic.
Yeah, and then started reading books by Jess Stern and Ruth Montgomery, found out about Edgar Casey, and it all started to make a lot more sense for me. But then I, you know, got married and had a family and pretty much forgot about that esoteric journey I was on until Shirley MacLaine came out in 1987 with her miniseries Out on a Limb. And that was my big wake-up call, and I've been doing this work ever since.
Why was it so important for you when you were putting together this study to combine life between live sessions and things like that?
Well, I felt that this would give people an understanding of the way that that their life was working. I used the analogy of Earth being a school, and I wanted to help people just understand what courses they're completing now and what courses that they still need to take. So I wanted to explore the significant event of a past life that was most impacting them now, and then to look at the origin of karmic issues, what created them, who were involved with them, why they weren't resolved, and then to revisit the death experience and understand that it was a transition with the soul passing through what Edgar Casey called God's other door. So I just wanted people to take responsibility and accountability for their lives and to stop blaming others and circumstances and understand, you know, I designed this life so that I would experience this in order for me to resolve it or overcome it or heal it and so that I can let that go and I can move on. And I do believe that it did accomplish that.
In the study that you did, Joanne, you asked an interesting question about what were they thinking at the moment of death, and how did most of them respond?
They all responded with very powerful thoughts that were both positive and negative, because they were experiencing both positive and negative emotions when they were leaving the earth. But powerful thoughts like fear and regret, those became the foundation of their next life. So some of the more common answers to that question, what are your last thoughts? I wanted to see if they were holding on to any resentments or any unfinished business from that life that was just ending, because those would be brought into this life. So a lot of them said, you know, I should have loved more. I should have done more. I abused opportunities. I wasn't kind enough. I didn't accomplish anything. I need to make retribution. Those are just some of the common comments that people would make when they examined that life they were finishing, and then they were bringing those thoughts into their pre-life session, and then many times that served as the foundation for the next life. I had one woman who, I think I told the story once before about she had head-to-toe psoriasis, and she wanted to know the source of it and took her back to a life in the Old West where she was a call girl. And I asked her, what were your last thoughts upon dying? And she said, I don't want to be touched anymore. Huh. And so in this life, she manifests a skin condition in which nobody wants to touch her. So so there's a correlation often between what your last thoughts are with what you're dealing with in the current lifetime.
I'm fascinated, too, by some of the last words of people who are going through the actual dying process. Mm-hmm. And Steve Jobs from Apple Computer and Apple Phones, his was, oh, wow, oh, wow. Frank Sinatra's was, I'm losing. Sam Kinison, who got killed in a car crash between L.A. and Vegas, kind of like was afraid of dying while he was dying there in his car accident. But then he said, okay, you know, something like that.
Yeah, there was that understanding of what's next.
What do you think they see?
I think that it's not so much what they see, but what they feel. Because when I've asked people, what does it feel like to die? They all say that they're fully conscious at that moment, and they have a tremendous sense of freedom and relief.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.